WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Ollie Barrett. Israel's military continues to push south in Gaza. The United Nations is warning of panic and a worsening humanitarian situation after Israel's latest evacuation orders for the city of Khan Yunis. Aid agencies say people are running out of options to flee too. The US military has discovered five more bodies after an Osprey crashed in West Japan last week, bringing the death toll to six. The aircraft was carrying eight military personnel when it plummeted into the sea off Yakushima Island. Chris Gilbert reports from Tokyo.
The US military in Japan says it's found five more bodies as well as a chunk of the aircraft during an underwater joint search with the Japan Coast Guard. The crash is the deadliest accident involving US Ospreys. Japan has officially requested the US ground all Osprey aircraft in the country until its safety is confirmed, a request the US at first did not acknowledge and has since ignored. The Osprey crashed while en route to the largest US military base at Okinawa.
China says it wants to strengthen relations with the European Union when their leaders meet this week for the first summit since the end of the COVID pandemic. Andrew Wood reports from Hong Kong.
China's Foreign Minister Wang Yi says Beijing wants a firm focus on pragmatic cooperation when President Xi meets the President of the European Council, Charles Michel, and the President of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, on Thursday. Beijing said that the EU and China are partners and not rivals, and that common interests far outweigh differences. President Xi and President Joe Biden's meeting last month in San Francisco overshadowed quiet diplomacy between the EU and China to find common ground. Beijing's expected to take Brussels to task on investigations into China's electric vehicle and steel industries. Brussels, meanwhile, is trying to balance economic decoupling with cooperation over climate change. Andrew Wood, Hong Kong.
At least eight people have been killed as two of India's southeastern states brace for the impact of Cyclone Migjam. Thousands have also been evacuated. The approaching severe cyclonic storm is already pounding the states of Tamil Nadu and Andhra Pradesh with heavy rain, as Neha Punia reports from Delhi.
More than 5,000 relief camps have been set up in both states as well. Governments have now imposed prohibitory orders preventing people from gathering in large numbers along coastal areas. There's a lot of curiosity surrounding such weather events, and officials are urging people to stay indoors and take their warnings seriously. The Army, the Coast Guard, the Navy have all been put on standby as well. Experts say that they're making sure that fishermen also don't venture out into the sea, and the focus now, they're saying, is to mitigate a lost life, and they're also keeping aside, they say, a significant sum of money to deal with any loss to property, which we might see in the aftermath of this storm.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
This is Rebecca with the Healthy Living Hour, airing live every other Tuesday from 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Time. My name again is Rebecca. I am your host. And a huge thanks to our fill-in soundboard operator, John Dickman, from the Blues to Bluegrass Show, airing every Monday, 7 to 9 a.m. right here on WSLR. Our goal is to offer a wide variety of topics and guests to better inform and educate our community on current health and wellness issues. As a disclaimer, everything said here today is uncensored, can be extremely diverse, and does not necessarily reflect the views of WSLR, nor their staff, nor volunteers. Further, no one here is providing any type of medical diagnosis, treatment, nor advice. Everything said here on the Healthy Living Hour is solely for general information and to foster critical thinking. We encourage you to consult your doctor for personal medical advice. So I'm so excited about today's program, and it reminds me of a quote from many of us remember our beloved Fred Rogers, Mr. Rogers. And I remember him sharing that his mother said that in the very difficult times in life, to always look for the helpers. There will always be helpers around. And as I've been communicating with our guest here, Dr. Washington Hill, it is my heartfelt belief that he is one of these true helpers that Mr. Rogers was referring to. Dr. Washington Hill is the founding director of the high-risk pregnancy program at Sarasota Memorial Hospital. Today, he is involved in the care of high obstetrical patients, including those with substance abuse and other problems, promoting safe motherhood for the needy and vulnerable in our counties. He is joining us here this morning to talk about what is available in our community for those who are pregnant and need various kinds of assistance. Dr. Hill, thank you so much for taking the time today to be here. Welcome. And would you care to please share a little more about yourself?
Well, thank you very much, Rebecca, for the kind introduction. And thanks for the opportunity to appear on your show. We've talked about it for some time, and I'm glad it's come to fruition. Well, as you mentioned, I have been in the community for more than 30 years and was actually brought here 30 years ago to initiate and to build the high-risk pregnancy program at Sarasota Memorial Hospital. We did that and then have looked at other opportunities in the community to advocate for good health and safe motherhood. And that's what brings me here, so that I hope I can share with your listeners in the community ways in which they can stay healthy, opportunities for them to get healthy, and various resources that they can utilize.
Yes, thank you. You sent me, we had a brief conversation, and let's start with deaths in the African American population and Hispanics during pregnancy. Those rates are proportionately higher than the white community. Why is that, and what do you think can be done to decrease this health disparity?
Well, that's a question that I and others have been asked many, many times. And for the listeners, I think most of them are aware that the maternal death rate in whites is about three times lower than the maternal death rate in blacks and Hispanics, which is three times higher, at least three times. The highest maternal death rate is in blacks, and then Hispanics, which is increasing, and then third in whites and other groups. So those are the facts. You can't get away from the facts. There was discussion at one time, are the facts real? Bottom line, the facts are real. This is data from CDC, and almost every state says the same thing. So the real question is, why is it? And many of us have looked at those data and said, why is it? And when we do that, we have to conclude several factors. And these are the factors. Some are the result of the hospital where they deliver. Is the hospital one that really emphasizes quality of care? Fortunately, in this community, we have hospitals that do deliveries. In this county, it's Sarasota Memorial. In Manatee County, it's Manatee Memorial. And the hospitals do have a real concern and are working very hard with their medical staff and nurses to provide that high-quality care. But if you think about it, many blacks and Hispanics live in communities where there are not those hospitals. Mm-hmm. Many hospitals that are within those areas, within those zip codes in the country, are not high-quality hospitals. The second issue has to do with the care that is provided by those who are in the hospital, the doctors, the nurses, the receptionists, etc. if a patient comes, if a Hispanic patient goes to a hospital or a black patient goes to a hospital with a complaint and they're treated with disrespect, they don't have respectful maternity or any other care, then they're going to be likely not to go back. I mean, that's the human nature. If we go to a store and we don't feel comfortable and we sit around waiting to be taken care of and then the clerk is rude, we don't go back. And the same thing is true with hospitals. So the care that the patient receives is very important. How the hospital does with the social determinants of health, those are the things that are very important. Does the hospital recognize that patients may have a problem getting to them because of transportation, or that they may live somewhere that they simply are unable to get in for care? So all of these factors, hospital, clinical care, providers, nurses, doctors, and the patient, all of these play a significant role. And unfortunately, we have work to do to make sure that all those things are top-notch.
Yeah, you bring up a really important point, and I was doing just a little surface research and found on a Harvard.edu site, Harvard site, that Florida ranks 32nd out of 50 states in terms of the highest maternal mortality rates. You know, that's death
true.
Rates. And the state has a maternal death rate of 28.1 per 1,000 live births from 2013 to 2017, according to the federal data. The mortality rate among black infants in the U.S. is more than twice that of white infants, in some urban areas even higher. And a growing body of evidence suggests, like you're mentioning, that a key factor may be stress among black mothers caused by racial discrimination.
Your data is all correct. There's been some more recent data that would suggest that we actually in Florida are not doing a good job at all in trying to curb maternal mortality in blacks and whites. And in fact, the latest data was 50 in blacks, and I want to say somewhere around 18 in whites. So you can see that we have a lot of work to do.
Right, and we're not going in a more positive direction.
We're not going in a more positive direction, but the new data will be coming out probably sometime next year. It will be looking at data up to 2022, but remember that will also include data from COVID. Mm-hmm. There are many, many efforts in place to improve that data, and I'll just mention one because it should be obvious, and it's a CDC campaign. And the campaign is called Hear Her. What a novel idea. That you should listen to the patient, hear what she has to say, whether it's about her or her baby, and then respond appropriately to it. And for the listeners, you can go to the website, CDC website, and you'll find information on Hear Her. They also have some very good vignettes from patients who are seen for maternity care, and they're sad. And it points out that what we need to do if we're going to improve maternal care or neonatal care is to hear her.
Yeah. Very powerful. What are some things that you think that you see in the system that can be done, maybe simply from a grassroots type of movement, a community awareness that can be done to just help shift this trajectory?
I think what's most important, whether it's in maternity care or elder care or pediatric care, is access to care. People might think, well, here we're in Sarasota. We have a fair amount of wealth in Sarasota, but we also have folks who are underserved and are not wealthy and are sick. And we need to continue to find ways and to publicize ways in which those individuals can get care. I got an email first thing this morning about from a colleague, a doctor, of someone who's elderly, 80-ish, and needs cardiac care. So the question is, where can that person go if they are uninsured or underinsured to get their care, other than showing up in the emergency room, which many patients do because they don't have any place else to go? So I think access to care, whether it be for the underserved, the undocumented, those who need care and don't have enough money to get it, I think that's really something that we need to solve. And then that rolls over to, well, how does the hospital help with increasing that access to care? For example, through the community medical clinic, which is great, not perfect, but is great to help with those patients. How does the patient find out that information? I've had patients who come and say, they have a community medical clinic at the hospital? Yes. It's been there for a while, for a long time, and they just don't know about it. So access to care, I think, would be number one on my list.
Right. And thank you, Dr. Hill. And you also mentioned to me a significant point of patients who have social problems, you know, and we were mainly focused on pregnancy and post-pregnancy. Right. These social problems, can you elaborate on that? You had a term and how the hospitals are tracking these and trying to find ways to...
It's called the social determinants of health.
Right.
Just think about that. The social determinants of health. What are they? Well, the social determinants of health are where we live, zip code, who we love, what religion we may subscribe to, who our friends are, what our zip code is, the environment in which we live in, how much money we have, do we work, are we unemployed? Those are just some of the social determinants of our health. Let's pick just one of them, and let's say it's economic. So if you are rich or are well off or have the means, you really don't have much problem getting access to care. I mean, there are concierge physicians, and you can sign up for a concierge physician for X amount of money and have his cell phone number and be taken care of. But suppose you are undocumented or you are living from paycheck to paycheck, you're just at the other end of the spectrum. And though that determinant of economics, wealth, will determine how your health care is. Same is true with your zip code. It's clear that where you live, your zip code will determine your social, your health. Mm-hmm. And therefore, many of us are working with patients who are in zip codes where they don't get a lot of information about health or a lot of information about access to help them with their care. So those are just a few of the social determinants of health. And nowadays, as you and I discuss, each hospital, whether it's a Sarasota Memorial Hospital, Blake, HCA hospitals, all of them are going to have to show their inspectors, whether it's the Joint Commission or who it is, how are you dealing with patients who have an issue with their social determinant of health? And it can't be just giving them a slip of paper and say, you need to go to the health department or center place or wherever and get your care. There has to be a real process, a plan on how they're going to be taken care of. And that's a good thing.
Yeah, that's a really good thing. And again, if you're just tuning in, you are listening to the Healthy Living Hour. We are interviewing Sarasota's own Dr. Washington Hill. I think I could call you a neonatal and pregnancy specialist.
It's not neonate. Neonates take care of the babies.
Okay.
I take care of the mothers.
You take care of the mothers.
I take care of the mothers. Give advice to others on how to take care of the mother. and then the baby's delivered, and we hand it over to a neonatologist.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Thank you for that correction.
No problem.
And we are live in Studio A. If anyone out there listening has any questions personally, specifically from Dr. Hill, our studio line is 941-954-8636. We welcome your calls. So back to you, Dr. Hill. Are African-American women now afraid to get pregnant and deliver at a hospital? Do you see a shift in that thinking process?
I did a conference a month or so ago for a group, and that question actually was asked by more than one person in the audience. And I think the answer is that black women and other women of color are concerned about getting pregnant. Mm. I think that's a true statement. Unless someone's been under a rock, as you just mentioned, the maternal mortality and the maternal death rate in women of color is high. So they are concerned. And I can see why a black woman, or any woman really in this country, would be concerned about my care, my maternity care, particularly if I have a high-risk pregnancy. So I don't know that the word is afraid, but they certainly are concerned. And what I would say to those women is to do your homework, do your reading, realize that everything you read on the internet is not true, even if it's from your best friend Jane. But do your good reading, and then go about the business of interviewing and picking a hospital and a OBGYN, or just like you would for your grandmother. If grandmother needed a cardiologist, you're not going to just pick one because somebody else said it's good. You're going to do your homework. And the same thing here. Do your homework. Interview the doctor. Go in and say, I'm thinking about getting pregnant, or I'm 6 weeks pregnant. Can we talk about your philosophy, et cetera? And I think if you do that and have a good conversation and a good relationship with your OBGYN, not saying that everything will go perfect and you won't have a problem, but at least you'll be able to talk to the person when you have that problem and get a better understanding of what's going on.
Dr. Hill.
Yes.
All right. Am I on? Yeah. I have a question, and that was that how do you feel the response is realistically to a doctor that's being questioned about their method of practice, and how realistic that answer will be to what they really do.
If you, let's say that you and your wife went into an office and took the advice that I just mentioned and sat down with Dr. Smith and asked pertinent questions about care, C-section. By the way, doctor, what's your C-section rate? Where they delivered at, how many babies they delivered in the last year. And the doctor was uncomfortable about answering any of those questions, I would tell you and your wife to get up and leave. that's only, I think, reasonable. So I think you would find in this community 99% of doctors would be very willing to answer the questions and answer them honestly. And you may find, and your wife will say on the way home, well, I didn't like that doctor. He answered my question, so I didn't like her. Then look for another doctor. That's what I would say.
Thank you. Yeah, great question, John. And I just perceive this to be a universal truth. Like, we have that innate ability to sense and feel when something is off or something is in alignment for us.
Right.
And I think we should heed that.
Right.
In these and different situations. So just a quick public service announcement. The Sarasota County Extension Office is offering a class about the basic of using worms to turn your kitchen scraps into rich, nutrient-dense compost. The class will discuss the benefits of recycling food waste via worm composting and how to build and care for a worm bin. This class will be held on Wednesday, tomorrow, December 6th, from 4 to 5 p.m., Registration and more information is available online at ufsarasotaext.eventbrite.com or by phone at 941-861-5000. Again, if you're just tuning in, this is the Healthy Living Hour right here on WSLR LP in Sarasota, 96.5 FM. And we are with Dr. Washington Hill talking all things pregnancy and babies. Thank you again, Dr. Hill, for joining us. You've been in this area and in this field for more than 30 years. What changes, if I may ask, have you seen in the care of the high-risk pregnant patient population? And as a follow-up, I'd love to ask, going beyond that, what changes have you seen in the care of the underserved or the non-insured or the undocumented in your history?
Sure. I came here, as I mentioned, 30-plus years ago. Excuse me. My morning voice. about 32, 33 years ago. And we were to try to develop a system of care for patients who had a high-risk pregnancy. And high risk can be something before the pregnancy, like diabetes or high blood pressure or recurrent losses of pregnancies. It can be something like within the pregnancy, like they develop hypertension or what we call preeclampsia, or it can be after the pregnancy where they develop some of those same disorders. So with the progression over the last 30 years, we've been able, I think, far easier to recognize the development of those situations and then to really aggressively treat them so that they do not harm the fetus. And when they do, such as hypertension, we've been able to recognize when it's time to get the baby out so that the baby does well and survives. So these are all, I can remember, just give you one example. When I came, we used to do what we call amniocentesis. Mm. And for the listeners, it was putting a needle into the abdominal, through the abdomen, into the uterus and taking out some amniotic fluid, sending it to the lab. The lab would run the chromosomes. Oh, a couple of weeks or so, we'd get the chromosomes back for you, and I would say, Rebecca, everything looks normal. We don't do that anymore. Now what we do is draw the blood, actually, and in less than a week, we can tell you that everything looks well. So we've come a long ways. That's just one example, a long ways in detection of abnormalities. Ultrasound has come a very long ways. The skilled ultrasonographer now can look at the fetus and tell you what small defect it may have in its left ear. Mm. So you can see that's progress, and that's the way medicine has gone over the last 30 years just here. The other point is one that's very important. Years ago, 30 years ago, a patient that didn't have any money really had very little access to health care. And what they used as their health care provider was the emergency room. Mm-hmm. And not only is that inconvenient, but it is also very expensive, not only to the patient, but to the hospital. And now, fast forward 30 years, there are lots of ways in which we can do that and help the patient without then using the emergency room as their care. We have a community medical clinic here. We have various other resources. We have the Federally Qualified Health Center or Center Place. We have other places where patients can go. We have physicians who are willing to see these patients so that they don't have to use. The goal is not to use the emergency room as your health care provider. And there are many ways in which you can find who you can get as a health care provider, calling the hospital, calling Center Place Health, talking to a friend, finding out from other resources, who can I see to take care of me.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Hill. So you mentioned Center Place Health and then the Community Health Clinic. Are these is this one and the same thing?
They are not.
Okay.
This Community Medical Clinic was started sometime around 25 years or so ago, and it was started at Sarasota Memorial Hospital to take care of patients who needed care. These were underinsured patients or non-insured patients. And it is staffed by volunteer physicians from Sarasota Memorial Hospital. So a physician can sign up and work several shifts. They will see patients, and there's a mechanism where that patient will eventually be seen and cared for in that physician's office. So it's a great resource for patients who are underserved and in need of care at Sarasota Memorial so that they can not go to the emergency room for their care. And the other place that you mentioned is Center Place Health. When I first got here, underserved patients who went to the emergency room, again, because they were using the emergency room as their medical care place, were referred to the health department. Mm-hmm. And the Department of Health at that time, I actually worked there for a while, was taking care of these patients who needed care and did a very good job for many years. And then through governmental changes in Tallahassee, et cetera, that was to stop. And Center Place Health, which is a federally qualified health center, has taken over the role of taking care of the underserved and the needy and the patients who are undocumented and those who need care. It's a federally qualified health center that provides all kinds of inclusive care to patients.
Wow, thank you for clarifying that. And we mentioned like undocumented people. What are you noticing in this population? Because I think they're terrified to be traced, have information that could possibly have some significant detrimental repercussions.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely not only to their life, to whether they stay in this country.
Yeah, that's what I mean, yeah.
Right.
Yes,
and I think what is important there, you very nicely indicated what their concerns are, is to get information out to that community. Mm-hmm. They have a Spanish-speaking radio station, I know. They have Spanish-speaking newspapers. They get a lot of information through their churches in the Catholic Church. There's a pregnancy center that gives information to them. I think what's important here is to get information out to them that health care is health care. Mm-hmm. If you're pregnant, you have the right to get health care in this country, regardless of whether you're documented or undocumented. You have the right to have that health care. And there are ways in which you can get that health care. Again, we go back to access to care. And one way is through a Center Place Health and other medical facilities that recognize the importance of them being seen. So, yes, they're very concerned, but I think that they have been educated over and over again, and you can't do it enough. Please come in. Please have your sister come in or colleague come in. If grandpa needs something, make sure that he gets in. You have children? Yes, you can be seen in the pediatric clinic, and no one's going to turn you away because you are undocumented.
So you mentioned, you know, Center Place Health as being a resource for this. Are there others in the community that you're aware of? And if so, do you know about how many?
I think the...
Locally here?
Yeah. Here in Sarasota County, Center Place Health would be the place where they need to go to and get their care. There can be a sliding scale arranged, et cetera. But also, if they show up undocumented in our OBECC, they're going to be taken care of. They're going to be taken care of and taken care of appropriately. There will also be somebody who will help them look at their finances and see, do they qualify for a program that the state has.
Very good. And just to kind of sideline this a bit, so places like Center Place Health,
right.
You're seeing diverse diagnoses. It's not just pregnancy. It's pretty much...
Center Place Health is a full system of health care. So they're, as you mentioned, they have OBGYN, mm-hmm. they have pediatrics, they have adult health, they have pediatric health, they have some behavior health. So it's a full gamut of health care.
Of primary care.
Of primary care, yes.
Oh, very good. Very good. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Hill. And again, we are here with Dr. Washington Hill talking all things OBGYN and... health of mothers and, you know, babies. Again, our studio line is open, 941-954-8636 here. And we'll just do our second public service announcement. The Sarasota County Extension Office is offering a class about One Seed, a program that ignites the spirit of unity by selecting and distributing the seeds of a single crop across the entire community. This year's crop is Swiss chard, and you'll be guided through its journey from sowing to harvesting. All attendees will receive a packet of Swiss chard seeds. The class will be held this Thursday, December 7th, from 10:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. Registration and more information is available online at ufsarasotaext.eventbrite.com or by phone, again at 941-861-9900. And back to Dr. Washington Hill here on this Healthy Living Hour. And thanks again for John Dickman filling in as a soundboard operator. Really appreciate you filling in on pretty short notice.
I ask Dr. Hill a real quick question?
Absolutely.
Doctor, you were mentioning the Community Health Center. And I don't think you mentioned, unless I didn't hear it, how do people can reach them and where they're located.
Right. Thank you. If your listeners will go to the smh.com website, I'm sure there's a link to the community medical clinic. They can also call the hospital at 941-9000. That's not right, 941-917-9000. But call the hospital, and I'm sure they can direct them to the community medical clinic as well. The clinic is located physically on the campus of Sarasota Memorial Hospital.
Oh, I was going to ask you that. Thank you so much.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's right there.
Yeah.
Wonderful. And I will update on the Healthy Living Hour social media on Facebook. I'll find the phone numbers, the websites,
sure.
And I'll put them in there as well.
Right.
So that's another way to access that information. Dr. Hill, and I think this is becoming a considerably bigger issue than maybe it was 10, 20 years ago. I'm not certain you would know this best, but some women during their pregnancy are challenged because of a substance use problem. You know, we're talking drugs, of course.
Yes.
Marijuana, we yes. have it on every corner, these medical marijuana
yes.
stores. They're like CVS here.
Walgreens.
Or Walgreens, yeah, exactly. they're that common and
yes.
that populous. What can those women, what are the health risks and concerns, if I may ask, of both the patient, the female, and the fetus? And then what can these women do? What can their partners and family do to assist them?
Well, thank you for making the turn to talk about this area, an area which I think is very important and very concerning if you want to talk about, we've been talking about safe motherhood. And certainly if we're talking about safe motherhood, it's important to recognize that someone, particularly a woman who has a substance use disorder problem, needs help. And almost 10 years ago now, we had a significant epidemic, if you'll recall, 2017, 2016, with opioids in this country.
Yes.
Significant. It's in the news now with the Sackler. So we had a significant problem, and that problem carried over, of course, to women who were pregnant. And the problems with using drugs during pregnant are twofold. One, there's an effect on the mother. Her lifestyle may be a problem, infectious diseases that she may have, sexually transmitted diseases may be a problem. And then if she's been using drugs for a long time, just one example would be a heart disease could be a problem, and skin diseases, et cetera. And then there's a problem, secondly, with the fetus, where the fetus would have problems being born early. We call that premature labor, or the baby will be what we call growth restricted or small. The growth has been basically restricted. So we have to find and identify these women so that we can help them during their pregnancy, not punish them. Some states have tried to punish them. That doesn't work. Obviously, if you try to punish someone and tell them if you come in, you're going to go to jail, then they just won't come in. Eventually, as I always tell patients, we will see you because you will go into labor and we will see you in our labor and delivery. But we don't want to punish them. We want to help them, and that's what you are asking. So we and others have developed a program called ASAP, Addiction Support in Pregnant. Patients who are interested in that program can contact the hospital as well. And what it allows us to do is to offer to the patient who needs help an opportunity to get that help. And one of the best places they can get that when they're pregnant is through a medication-assisted treatment center. Those centers are called MAT, M-A-T. We're fortunate in this community in Sarasota to have a number of them. The largest one is Operation PAR. It's located on Tamiami Trail. There's one called New Seasons. It's located on Clark Road. There's one at Centerstone. As well, and there's one in the formerly known as First Step, which is now LifeShare. LifeShare it's called. So the bottom line is our patients who have a problem with opioids or other substances like meth need to reach out to these centers. They will find good care, compassionate care, and care that they can use not only while they're pregnant, but afterwards. The other issue that you bring up is marijuana and pregnancy. The short answer is you shouldn't smoke marijuana when you're pregnant, period. And someone may say, well, why not? Well, it's clear now that marijuana crosses the placenta and can affect the fetus. One thing I always like to do is say, listen to the facts. The fact is, today is Tuesday, right? Mm-hmm. The fact is, the sky is blue. I think it was when I came in. And the fact is that marijuana crosses the placenta and affects the fetus. Someone will say, well, how? Well, it can slow down the development of the fetal brain. And when that happens, it ends up in a slowdown of what we call cognitive behavior. That's just a big word for how we act. Right? And how we learn.
Yeah, thank you for simplifying that so eloquently.
How we act, how we learn, how we pick up on things. Mm-hmm. That's called cognitive behavior.
And how we react.
How we react. Yeah. Thank you. When something happens, how do we react? Do we react in a nice, calm way? Well, Rebecca, you really shouldn't have said that to me. Or do we go off the handle and abuse Rebecca and then end up in the police department? But seriously, early use of marijuana does affect cognitive behavior. It affects the behavior later on. And there are other things that it does as well. But we know that now, so we should really encourage patients not to use marijuana when they're pregnant. I had to take a field trip yesterday to the hospital in Port Charlotte, and they had a very nice display on entering labor and delivery of marijuana in pregnancy. Now, the issue comes up about medical marijuana, and the bottom line there as well is we should not be using medical marijuana when you're pregnant. You should find something else that a doctor can help you, help prescribe for you to use versus your medical marijuana. And the same thing holds true for CBD. CBD may or may not have THC in it. So I think the message to the listener is no drugs during pregnancy. If you are using drugs, there are places that you can get help in the MAT clinics and the ASAP program that we have. And then no use of marijuana during pregnancy. Did I make that clear?
I think you made that clear. And I think that's an important point. You know, I was looking up some data and statistics, and marijuana use during pregnancy gives you a higher predisposition for having premature birth.
Yes.
Fetal growth restrictions, yes. So low birth weight.
Yes.
Neural tube defects, like you said, the brain, its impact on the brain. Yeah. This was kind of surprising to me, and I'm not quite certain of the mechanism, but anemia, it can cause even anemia, which is really uncommon in babies.
Well, certainly uncommon in babies, but it's not uncommon in the high-risk woman who may be seen in a clinic setting. That they would have anemia. Some of that is because they're not eating right.
Right.
I remember when we talked about the social determinants of health, one of those social determinants is where you live, and where you live will determine what is available for you to eat. It's okay for me to say to a diabetic, now you need to go home and eat healthy. Okay, well, if she doesn't have a healthy place to buy fruits and vegetables in her neighborhood or in her community, she's not going to eat healthy. She's going to go to various fried food places to get her food. So, and they frequently will end up having a significant anemia. Mm. But as you mentioned, marijuana has been shown to cause all of those things. And the incidence of marijuana, two things. In a population of pregnant women, is somewhere around 20%. So that's 1 in 5 women who are pregnant are using marijuana, and we need to encourage them not to. And then the other thing that my son has told me is the marijuana of today is not the marijuana of grandpa.
Yes.
It's a lot stronger marijuana. So all of this is to say again, no marijuana, listeners, when you're pregnant. And those of you who are seeing folks, no stigma as we try to take care of these patients.
Yeah, very important. And you bring up proper nutrition and adequate nutrition. And we just found out recently here we have a local discounted grocery store, Sunflower Discount Market. It's right here near downtown Sarasota.
Good.
And they're one of a few groceries that participate in it's a Florida initiative where people who qualify for food stamps or the EBT, they have a program where they do match. If you use your food stamp EBT card, they get up to $10 matched of free produce with their over $10, grocery purchase with that. So they're really trying to put ways. We need more of that,
right.
But at least, it encourages that population to be able to have access to fresh fruits and vegetables, which we all know we need more of.
Right. And the other thing, the farmers markets do that as well. There's a farmers market in Newtown that's held on Saturdays, and there's farmers markets all over the area that help patients get fresh fruits and vegetables.
Yeah, that's good. Anything else? we talked about that. Lobster bread tricks. I think we covered pretty much everything on our talking points. We have about 10 more minutes,
oh,
Dr.
my goodness.
Hill. Yeah. Do you have anything else you'd like to share and that you think that patients, the young women who are considering wanting to have a family, or if they're pregnant now, what can some of these area resources that maybe we haven't mentioned, and things to just consider?
Oh, there is another resource. It's called the First 1,000 Days.
Mm.
The First 1,000 Days was started, sometimes I lose track of time, but probably 5 years ago by a couple who were Chuck and Marjorie Baranczyk. Unfortunately, they passed away probably about 3 years ago now. And what Chuck and Marjorie wanted to do was to help those who needed help.
Mm.
That's what they were all about. I clearly remember talking to Marjorie about that. And that's where the Baranczyk Foundation came from. And as many of your listeners know, the Baranczyk Foundation is all about helping those who need to be helped in this community. And what grew out of Marjorie's desire to help the future of babies and women who had had a baby was the First 1,000 Days. The day number one starts with conception. And day number 1,000 ends at around 3 years of age. And this program has allowed us to dig deep into what is happening during that first 1,000 days and to assemble a network of providers and organizations that can help the pregnant woman and the newborn during that period of time. I'll just give you one example. Let's say that a patient goes home and they have identified that she needs help with food. Then we can refer her to the food bank, know that she's been referred, know that she has gone to the food bank and gotten the needs that she needs to have. And there are many other agencies. The last time I think they told me, don't quote me on this, but it's certainly somewhere around 80 to 90 agencies that are part of the First 1,000 Days network. And the second part is that is allowed through a system called Unite Us, and it basically does just that, Unite Us, and that system is being used in mother and women's at the hospital. But more important, it's been rolled out to the entire hospital so that when grandpa goes in and then ends up needing some type of care, let's just say he needs access to the community medical clinic, or he needs access to food or to another provider, they can use that as well.
Mm.
So these are two agencies, two patterns of referral that really will help a lot. To reach the First 1,000 Days, again, just look it up on the internet, type in First 1,000 Days Suncoast, and you will be able to connect with them. I think that's a very important message to leave our listeners with.
Oh, thank you so much. Great information. Again, I'm going to update our social media posts with all of these links and info. And Dr. Hill, we have a caller. Thank you for calling in. Caller, you are on the air. Can you give us your first name and where you're calling from, please?
Well, I dare to give my last name, if that's okay. This is Bob Connors, listening to one of my favorite shows, The Healthy Living Hour.
Bob.
And I had mentioned to Rebecca a couple of months ago that I had met a doctor on a plane back in September flying out to California, and it turns out that he's going to be a guest of mine on the Peace and Justice Report next Wednesday, and I feel Dr. Hill probably knows who it is, so I wanted to give a plug. I'm going to do my research by listening to this interview a few times for my interview next week with Dr. Heywood Brown. Do you know Dr. Brown, Dr. Hill?
I know Dr. Brown very, very well.
And, I had a sense you might.
give Heywood my regards.
I will do that. I will do that. And I was just so surprised this morning when you began talking, and I said, my goodness, this sounds like the same subject matter we're going to talk about next week. But it's so important and so instrumental to helping pregnant women, and once they do have their children. I know Dr. Brown has been giving workshops around the country related to the diversity in the health outcomes as far as
absolutely,
you know, your economic situation goes. So, yes, that's what he's going to be on next week. So that's why I had to call Rebecca to make sure that Dr. Hill knew Dr. Heywood Brown, and I will let Dr. Brown know that Dr. Hill was on your show this week.
Tell Dr. Brown that Dr. Hill knows him.
He knows him very well. I know
him very well. Thank you.
Okay, that's a plug for my show and a plug for your show, Rebecca. It's the best health show in all of South Florida. No question.
Thank you. Thank you, Bob.
Much.
And, Bob, your show, Peace and Justice Report, so that's next Wednesday's program right here on WSLR 96.5 FM, WSLR.org, Wednesday at, same bat channel, same bat time, 9 to 10 a.m. next Wednesday.
Yes, Dr. Brown is supposed to be on the second half of next week's show. And make sure you listen tomorrow as well to the Peace and Justice.
Thank you, Bob. Thanks for listening and calling in. Appreciate your support and all the good you do.
Thank you.
Bye. Thanks, Bob. And so, Dr. Hill, back to this. We just have about three more minutes.
Sure.
I'd love to make full use of that. You gave us some great information, great community resources, and how to find those. Again, I'll be updating the social media posts and sharing that information. What else? Any other important points that you would like to drive to our community with these last few remaining moments?
If you're pregnant or thinking about getting pregnant, interview the doctor. Look around at the hospitals. I'm not saying that one hospital is better than another, but certainly if you have a high-risk pregnancy, clearly Sarasota Memorial Hospital in this county is where you need to go. And, of course, in Sarasota County, it's the only hospital that does deliveries and, of course, has a NICU. But if you are in other counties, talk to the nurses and those who have delivered there and see if that's the place for you, and interview your doctor and make sure that the doctor, he or she, is the person that you want to take care of you during a pregnancy.
Dr. Hill, I have a real quick question, and that is the 1,000-day program?
First 1,000 days,
first
yes.
First 1,000 days. That sounds very, very valuable to
yes, it
a
is.
New parent.
Yes.
Where is that available to our listeners to be able to get more information?
Go to the website first1000daysuncoast, and you'll get all the information there about what it's all about and how to reach out to them.
Very good. And Dr. Hill, so thank you again so much for being a guest on our show. And I just want to say, and I hope it's okay, Dr. Hill, but Dr. Hill is so passionate and feels that this information today is so relevant and so necessary that I know he changed one of his own appointments just to be here to grab this opportunity sooner rather than in February or March, because there is such a need in our community. Thanks again, Dr. Hill. People want to find you. How do they do that, please?
I think the best place, again, is through Center Place Health, or they can reach out to you, and you can give them my email address.
Very good. Thanks again.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Please stay tuned for Democracy Now!